copywriting encompasses all of your company's messaging. And it's not just, you know, a front-end acquisition. It's not just a Facebook ad. It's not just an email. And so that's how I view it. I view it very holistically. And when you start to wrap your mind around copy is everything and copy is communication, then you start to treat the communication that you do in your company very differently.
You're listening to Real Marketing Real Fast, the only podcast that brings you unfiltered, undaunted, insider information on the latest tools and technologies for online marketers. Prepare to dive deep into marketing myths, breakthrough models, and cutting-edge strategies that will have an immediate impact on the growth of your business. And now, here's your host, marketing expert Doug Morneau.
Well, welcome back, listeners, another episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. Today, we're going to talk about a very interesting topic. We're going to talk about copywriting direct response and how you can use copy to help move the sales dial. So today on our podcast, I've got a professional copywriter, Lucas Reszewski. Lucas was a officer in the Army. He's now a top copywriting mentor. He's an author. He's a digital marketing expert, and he has deep expertise in creating sales funnels. So if any of those pique your interest, then make sure that you sit down, tune in, listen in, and take some notes. So there's a reason why that students all over the world and clients who own eight-figure businesses come to Lucas. He's become known as the copywriter that millionaires recommend. Lucas is able to take complex marketing problems and turn them into simple, elegant, practical solutions practically overnight. He's made millions of dollars for his clients on launches, cold traffic campaigns, and Kickstarter campaigns. His copy still holds the control in several markets, and clients continuously come back to him to launch his new products. So Lucas has made over seven figures in the last 5 years from his direct copywriting, direct response marketing experience. And what's really impressive was looking at Lucas's clients that he's worked with. He's worked with over 160 clients, but many you may recognize, like Ryan Levesque, the founder of the Ask Method and the best-selling author, Mike Dillard, who is the founder of Magnetic Sponsoring in the Elevation Group. I was a really bright guy. I really enjoy Harlan Kilstein, who's the owner of Dogginton Post. Yannick Silver, who's a direct marketing guy who many of you will know. Ty Lopez, who has become really an online celebrity and superstar in the social space for sure, and selling courses. Orlin Plaff. And Josh Turner, who I love his material. Josh founded a company called LinkedIn Selling, and he runs a LinkedIn University or Linked University, which helps people to generate revenue and leads through their LinkedIn. Well, welcome to the show, Lucas. I am so excited to have you here today, and you're talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and something that, as I introduced you, I think our listeners really need to sit down, roll up their sleeves, grab a pen and paper, and take some notes. So in terms of your bio and your background, is there anything new that you wanted to add?
No, I'm staying pretty consistent and steady with what I do. I try to, every time I see that little shiny object in the corner of my eye, I tell myself to double down on what I'm good at and what I need to keep doing. So it's pretty accurate still.
Well, good for you. A lot of people, and I think that's one of the challenges I see in the business and marketing world especially, is everybody's chasing the shiny object. They're following the new guru, and there's some things that just don't change. There's the basics. If you look at the financial pyramid, they'll talk about, you know, making sure you got life insurance, and they kind of stack it all the way up to the nice things. And often I think people overlook copy, the importance of copywriting and why they should invest in it. It's not something you can just have your friend, your neighbor, your kid produce for you. So do you want to share with us, you know, kind of how you got into this business and how you've transitioned from one career into another?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird route. So I assumed for a long time when I was growing up that I was going to be career military. My family was military, and I got a scholarship to go to school as a Army officer. So right up until about 20 years old, I thought I was going to be career military. And this entrepreneur thing wasn't even on the radar. But in college, two things happened. I met my wife, and I decided that I didn't want to be, you know, gone for 50% of our marriage. And I also discovered Early to Rise, which is a newsletter that was written originally by Mark Ford and then taken over by a guy named Craig Ballantyne. And they, that newsletter had a ton of insight on copywriting, marketing, entrepreneurship, business, and all that sort of thing. So simultaneously realizing that I didn't want to do what I thought I wanted to do with my life and discovering this newsletter kind of set me down the rabbit hole of entrepreneurship. And long story short, I met and then got to work with Mike Dillard. He's a guy who ran a company called The Elevation Group and several others.
Yeah.
And I got to work with him, and that was a fantastic experience. But he encouraged me to learn the skill of copywriting. And after being stubborn for about 2 years, I followed his advice.
He's a pretty smart guy. I like him.
Yeah. Just so, and down to earth and just like understatedly brilliant. I don't know if like people who aren't super connected with him don't realize just how good he is at putting together an offer and how good he is at his craft.
Yeah.
But so he encouraged me specifically to learn copywriting. And then again, long story short, I ended up getting pretty good pretty quick. I found some initial clients, and then the rest is history. I've worked with over 160, maybe 165 by now, different clients. I've coached thousands of people as a coach in several people's programs. And now I have almost exactly 100 junior copywriters that I've personally trained and mentored that have gone out into the world and become freelancers and, you know, in-house writers at places like Agora and Mind Valley and things like that.
That's amazing. So, yeah, I love the copy that comes from Agora. We've hired, I had a writer working for us in the financial sector for a client that was from experience with Agora because they're, you know, their people are trained really well and their copy converts really well.
Yeah, they are world class. I mean, you can't get much better than a true Agora trained financial copywriter if you're in that space.
Yeah, that's really cool. So why don't you share with us? I mean, I have a bit of an understanding what you do. So, you know, I love direct response. So for our listeners and our audience that are thinking, oh, well, you're going to write web copy. Why don't you, in your own words, why don't you explain what you do to help clients move the sales dial?
Sure. So like with anything that involves humans and persuasion, it's complicated when you dig down into it. But at the core, it's just communication. It's being able to accurately convey a message to an intended audience. That's it. And so once you dig down beneath that core idea, you start to think, okay, who am I talking to? Why am I talking to them? What am I trying to get them to do? How do they know, like, how do they know me? What do they want? So a lot of like really human interaction comes into writing copy. And it's every single time a person or a prospect or a customer interacts with your company, they have to encounter copy at each juncture. You know, even when they're dealing with support, even when they are, you know, in the raw stages of just discovering you. So I really believe that copywriting encompasses all of your company's messaging. And it's not just, you know, a front-end acquisition. It's not just a Facebook ad. It's not just an email. And so that's how I view it. I view it very holistically. And when you start to wrap your mind around copy is everything and copy is communication, then you start to treat the communication that you do in your company very differently. Because every, you know, it's an opportunity to communicate and an opportunity to push your, you know, your products or your brand or your story. And that's basically what I would explain to someone who thinks it's just web copy. You know, it's just a thing that you have to slap onto your site. It's really not. It's the actual conversation you're having with your potential customers and your actual customers.
Well, and I like the way you describe it because it's not just a landing page. So often you'll see people run an ad, drive you to a landing page, you'll go through that process and they'll go to their website. And it's like that, like, you know, there was a show years ago, my kids used to watch Sesame Street, and says, one of these things is not like the other. It's like, hey, hang on a sec. I saw your ad. Yep. It kind of looked like your landing page. And after your landing page, I went to your website and the messaging is totally different.
Yeah, that incongruence is just so, and it's crazy how much time we put into that landing page or that we put into that funnel, and then we don't realize that the prospect is probably only going to spend about 15 seconds on that. And then they're going to bounce to the rest of your stuff and try and figure out more about you if they have any questions or if they're interested or whatever. So yeah, it's fascinating to see where we focus our attention versus what the actual user experience is.
Yeah, and like you said, and where they are in the user experience, are they just shopping? Are they just trying to get, is it somebody, a junior person in the office has been tasked to find me X and they're just starting the search, or are, have they already kind of narrowed down what they want for specific services? Now they're trying to choose a vendor and they're way down the road.
Right. I actually, I teach all of my students a concept called the Big Four, and it's four big pillars on how you construct a specific message to a specific marketplace.
Okay.
And when you dig into that process, you start to realize, okay, my, my stuff over here, my about page is probably going to have to be written for maybe a founder who wants to work with me. If I'm a service provider, like they want to know who I am, right?
Right. Yep.
My my contact form might be for the guy who's just seeking information and wants a quote, or, you know, and when you pass everything through this lens of who you're communicating with, then everything about your site, everything about what you're doing, everything about your social just shifts. And I think it's a good shift, but it's kind of overwhelming at first. You're like, oh crap, all of this matters.
But when you think about the amount of discussion you'll see around branding and making sure your branding is congruent, and then you look at the copy, you're going, okay, you've got the branding right, but like you said, the messaging is not correct. So do you, can you share with us, you know, a major breakthrough or success you've had using, you know, someone using your skills? You can name a client or not name a client. It's totally up to you.
Yeah. I mean, so a lot of what I've done is under NDA, but one of the things that I'm pretty proud of that, that I can talk about is I worked with a client named Josh Turner. He has a LinkedIn agency where it generates leads for people using LinkedIn. And he also has a course that teaches people to do the same thing, essentially.
Yep, bought the course.
Yeah. So so that's awesome.
there you go.
Pretty well-known guy in the space, yep. Right? And when I came in to help him with one of his launches, he was running into the issue where the marketplace was leaning away from LinkedIn as a tool. Like it just wasn't like the quote-unquote hot new thing.
Sure. Not the shiny object anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, he had been promoting a similar product for a while, like it was his flagship. And so there was a little bit of staleness to that offer. And coming into that kind of problem, we were able to reframe not only his offer, but also the entire idea of LinkedIn using some good target market research and a little bit of overreach into different industries to find congruent ideas. And that sounds really like startup-y speak, but basically what we did was we found a cool concept that was in tech journalism about how people talk about technology in relation to how it's actually progressing. And it's called the Gartner Hype Cycle.
Okay.
And I just found that researching, I'm kind of a nerd and a researcher. And so we took that one concept that was well-known in one area and applied it to his marketing funnel. And essentially the big idea was LinkedIn is currently on a downward hype cycle, but on an upward exponential growth cycle, which means it's the perfect time for an opportunistic entrepreneur to use it as a tool.
Sure.
Because
yeah, that makes sense.
Because when people aren't talking about it, you know, nobody's talking about it, but it's growing, you know, and we had a great way of explaining it. Like Microsoft had just purchased it. They were pouring tons of resources into it. And now lo and behold, about a year and a half later, LinkedIn is back on the map and people are starting to talk more about it because of how it actually grew. So not only did we find a cool hook for that product, but also we ended up being right, which is cool.
I get that. I mean, I'm a huge LinkedIn fan. I bought Josh's stuff and I gave it to one of my staff. I want you to go through and learn this because she manages my LinkedIn stuff. And so I mean, the copy was good. Sales funnel was good enough. Obviously, that like you said, Josh got a great reputation in the marketplace. So when somebody's thinking about, you know, I need to look at reevaluate my existing copy content, what are the starting points for them? If say you and I are going to work together, you're going to say, okay, fine. You know, where do we start?
Yeah. So I'll go back to that Big Four concept because a lot of the time, I mean, entrepreneurs are always doing stuff that's their boon and their curse. So they never start from square one, right?
Yeah.
And so I can't come in and really say that every person who's listening to this can do the exact same thing based on where they're at in their company.
Yep.
But I can say that if they are willing to take, like, you know, if they're willing to stop for a second and look at things through a different lens, then they might find a lot of things they can do. And that lens would be what I call my big four analysis. It's your target market, their primal desire, or I call them the three primals, which I'll explain in just a sec, the awareness level of that marketplace and the sophistication level of that marketplace. So those are the four: target market, primals, awareness, and sophistication.
So when you say awareness, what are you referring to?
Yep.
Your client's awareness of the marketplace or the potential customer's awareness of your client?
So in this case, I am referring to the potential prospect or buyer that you as an entrepreneur are thinking about communicating with.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's your customer or your desired customer.
Sure.
And when I talk about awareness, I'm specifically talking about their awareness of the problem and or solution that they're seeking in the context of your company.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, if you're a lead generation agency, then you're looking for clients who obviously want to end up purchasing your services to generate leads. But where is that client at in their awareness of the problem? Like, do they have enough leads? Do they not have enough leads? Are the leads bad? That's awareness. Now, sophistication is how what your competitors are doing, essentially, in that same space. What they're saying, how they're saying it, who they're talking to, what the messages are, what the general zeitgeist of the market is saying, because that's going to affect how your potential prospect views your copy. You can't get around it, because we don't do anything in a vacuum.
Yeah.
So those four things: your target market, their primals, their awareness of their own problem, and the market's like sophistication around what their messaging is. That those are the four main pillars. And any entrepreneur or any copywriter can take those and put that as an analysis on their marketplace. And what you're quickly going to realize is the more narrow and specific your target market, the easier it is to drill down onto their primal desires, their primal fears, and their core needs. And then once you've got that, the easier it is to understand how aware they are of their problem. And then how aware they are of their problem dictates what kind of messages they're seeing in the marketplace from your competitors. So everything follows. And once you've got that laid out in as much detail as you can, you're essentially going to have copy that writes itself.
Yep.
So for example, like a bad target market is saying business people, right? There's 200 million of those, maybe more. But a great target market would be cosmetic dentists who live in major metropolitan areas in the United States. That's a pretty good target market.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so if I take that pretty good target market and then I dig down into their primal desires and their fears and their core needs, then I realize that those dentists' primal fears might be having to close down their practice or be seen as a failure in the eyes of their peers. Okay. That's a fear.
Yep.
That's big.
Yeah, it's a big fear, yeah.
Yeah. Their desire might be to work less or to open another practice or to golf more or to maybe they're mission driven and they generally want to help more people look, you know, better with their smile or whatever their desire is. And then their core needs are actually a concept Tony Robbins teaches, which, you know, you have your four core needs that every human being fulfills. It's, you know, consistency, variety, significance, and love and connection. So those are always fulfilled by a person. And how's that dentist currently fulfilling those? And if you're going to sell something to them, does it violate those or does it threaten those? Because once you know that, then you can kind of dig into awareness, you can dig into the sophistication, and the copy just writes itself, because now your webinar, your book, your seminar, your, you know, free dinner or whatever is super easy to communicate to that specific person. That makes sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, with the exception of the copy writes itself part, because...
Let me carry that thought through then.
Okay.
So you've got your dentist, right?
Yep.
And you understand what his primal desires and core needs are,
sure.
Right? You now know that he is aware enough of his own problem he's aware that he's not seeing enough patients come through the door, right? He's not getting enough phone calls. That's what he's aware of. So he's aware of a problem.
Yeah.
And right. He probably thinks that maybe he needs to do more flyers. Maybe he needs to post on some social media or something, but he's not really aware of a real solution. And the sophistication being, you have competitors who are also dental marketing agencies, but they are trying to target a bunch of different people and they're not really speaking to him very well. So he's not a sophisticated prospect in terms of the marketing that's around, right?
Yep.
So knowing all of that, a Facebook ad that says, if you're a dentist with more than 5 chairs and you're not consistently getting 20 calls a day from prospects, then something is wrong in your marketing and I'd like to help you. Boom.
That's right. There you go. Yep.
It just, you know who he was, you knew what his problem was, and you could speak to him in his language, copyright itself.
Okay. Now I get it. I mean, that totally makes sense. I mean, I think a lot of the issues are we're running so fast often, we don't take the time to actually sit down and work through that process.
Right.
And then, but complain that we're not getting the results we want.
Exactly.
not putting in the work. It's like saying, hey, I walk by the gym every day or I drive by the gym every day, but I'm not getting in shape. It's like, yes, because you got to stop, get out of your car, put in an hour a day. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. So
yeah.
What's the biggest myth that you hear? Like, like I said, I love direct mail copy and direct response. I mean, I collect stuff. I go through the problem, agitate, solve. I love to watch the ads and go, man, I can't believe someone paid someone to produce that. It was so bad. It didn't speak to my need or it's like, but that's usually in traditional media. So when people are talking, we're thinking about, hey, what you really need to do is get your copy in line with your prospects or hire someone to do that. What's the biggest myth that you hear in your industry?
Oh man. So it goes back to awareness levels, right? So if someone is like you and they're aware of direct response and they've been in the game for a while, they're going to have a totally different perspective on what copy is capable of doing, but they also might not know like the modern landscape, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah.
So one of the myths right now is that if you are familiar with copywriting and you've heard of the legends, the Halberts, the Carltons, the Bensavengas, those guys, a lot of people view copy as like this thing that you buy once, you pay a really expensive copywriter to do it, and then it just works. That's like the myth. But in reality today, the best possible use of your time is to invest in a really good copywriter, but allow that copywriter the ability to manage their copy through the process, through the writing, through the testing, through the editing and optimization. Because right now we have a better ability to test faster with more accuracy than anybody has ever had in direct response.
But, absolutely, yeah, that's so right on. Yeah,
yeah. And it's insane. It's truly. I mean, you were back in the direct mail days, so you know that. It costs 5, 10, 15, 20, maybe more thousands of dollars just to send the first mailer and see to a portion of the list. And then you had to wait a couple weeks to see what happened. Now you drop $100 on Facebook ads and you've got results by the next day. And it's just absolutely incredible. But people are still holding to that myth of, I'm going to pay this guy 10 grand and then it's going to be a miracle and I'm going to make $1 million. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people think the same thing with the website. Hey, I built my website. I'm done. It's like, no, now you're just starting. You've started. Now you need to see how people interact and respond. I mean, when we were testing ads or headlines for direct mail, we were running classified ads in the newspaper, running them to a phone number and just seeing which line got the most calls. Mm-hmm. Like we weren't answering them or responding. It was simply, can this classified ad generate 100 calls a day? Well, then maybe it's a good headline to use for our mailer.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff is so much faster and easier to do nowadays. But people are still waiting for that home run. At least, I guess the people who haven't really played in the game too long.
Well, and I've seen, like, if I look at your style and just reading your own copy on your website, I've seen, at least in the financial space, that if we had somebody that had more of a contrarian view, that we got a higher conversion rate. So we'd use the same media. We'd buy, maybe 500,000 names of email to go out with one writer, 500,000 to go with the other writer, and one writer would just kind of crush it because one guy wrote and people were indifferent to him. He was a newsletter writer. They didn't really like him. They didn't really hate him. The other guy was either you loved him or you hated him, and his copy just crushed it.
Yep. Yeah. And that's a huge part, especially in a saturated market like finance.
Yeah.
Because people are so exposed to so many offers and so much good copy that you got to kind of shake them by the collar sometimes. to get their attention. So
yeah, I mean, you could always go into a less competitive space like health and wellness. I'm sure there's not much copy in there.
Exactly.
Or golf, or, you know, something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's just tiny little niches.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are you most excited about in the next 6 to 12 months?
6 to 12 months. You know, what's really exciting right now is actually the opportunity created by some of the backlash that these big media platforms are experiencing because of content. So you might've seen in the news, I don't know if you follow the news. I try not to follow it too closely, but the Cambridge Analytica scandal and Facebook,
yeah,
the takedown of Alex Jones's channel by YouTube,
yeah,
the general push towards more content and more like rich stuff on Google. So all of these major online platforms are policing the types of ads, the types of content that become that come up on their sites.
Sure, more than they ever have, for sure.
More than they ever have. And they've always been like a little bit anti-direct response, but now they're becoming extremely focused on user experience and the type of content that's being pushed out on their sites.
Yeah.
So I personally believe as a copywriter, that's a massive opportunity because you're going to get these people who've been skirting the edges of what's acceptable on those platforms and making decent money, but really having to play that balance. They're going to get wiped out. They're going to leave. They're going to get pissed. And then they're not going to start back up. And so now you've got a huge opportunity of, a lack of who used to be savvy or sophisticated advertisers. And all that remains is for, you know, a good copywriter with a good funnel to come in and play with the rules as they are and just make bank and kind of fill that space.
Yeah, I agree. I've definitely seen a huge shift. I mean, when we're working in the financial spaces, we ended up spending time on the phone with Google's legal team. And I said, look, you know, we want to be compliant. So, you know, we don't want to run ads that get disapproved. So just tell us, you know, in a perfect world, how could we work with you? And it made a huge difference. People go, how can you run those ads? It's like, well, we just got really close to what their exact requirements were. And we just stayed well within the lines. We colored in the lines. And guess what? They're happy.
Exactly. Yep. And that's so underrated. And the communication with a real person, the relationship that you have is super important.
Yeah. And I'm seeing a lot more copy go towards more almost like editorial copy, as well, where it's less, it's not as direct response as I like more ask for the money part.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like you said, so the copy, the content's changing, and I'm seeing a lot of changes to support what you're saying in the content area. In addition to what's happened in Cambridge, which happened, you know, close to my home because I'm in Vancouver and there's some of the team was in Victoria, which is about a half hour away from me. But you're seeing things like Google and Facebook and Twitter banning industries now. They're banning cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. They're banning CBD, even though CBD is a legal product. They're banning it. I recently saw, so I follow the news as it relates to my industry, and they just recently started banning recovery and addiction counselors and houses and treatment centers until they can go through a certification process. And so it's getting tougher for advertisers, like you said, who have been doing kind of, you know, schlepping crappy stuff out there.
Right.
Those days are coming to an end.
Yeah, they are. And they have been for a while, but people have been able to kind of play with it or, you know, look for hacks. And I understand that mentality because if you can figure it out, then you make good money for a little while, but it's never how I've chosen to play. I don't like that, you know, look over your shoulder type mentality.
No.
But it's super interesting because the opportunity is now there due to the vacuum.
Right.
You know, if someone leaves the platform or tries to market somewhere else, then you get to fill it. And there's still such a massive amount of volume at a much cheaper price than you could have gotten pretty much anywhere else. So as a copywriter, that's really exciting because I can put the right message in front of more people for less cost. And that's just fun to play with. But I think to your point, you also said, copy's moving in a little bit more of an advertorial or, you know, kind of like content-based direction, I guess. What I've found is that a lot of people discount the kind of, my wife used to like volunteer at the zoo and she, one of her jobs was to watch the animals in their pens and see what they do and watch their behavior. And there's something called stereotypical behavior in animals, especially when they're penned up or and humans also have stereotypical behavior. You can kind of gauge what your message is going to do or elicit, like what kind of action it's going to elicit in a person based on their stereotypical behavior, and use that to your advantage in marketing. Because it's not as simple, or it's not as direct as saying, you know, hey, if you want more information on this thing, click here, and then they click there. But for instance, you could write something on Facebook and it was shared a million times. But what happens after you wrote that and it's shared that million times is that almost every single time a person will click to the page, look and see what else is available there, look for more information on the page. And if you understand that one step of stereotypical behavior, you can write things that get attention that are going to lead to that. And those are all trackable, especially if you have link tracking and all that kind of stuff. So the traditional view of a person doing direct response and saying, this is my mailer, this is my action, anything outside of that is, you know, is unwanted or we're trying to mitigate. I think that we're going to start seeing with better tracking and with better analytics that stuff that is designed to capture attention and elicit a mood and then drive some sort of stereotypical behavior afterward is going to get more and more traction in like how effective it is. But basically, that's a really scientific way of saying that branding and content is becoming a very, very viable direct response mechanism.
Well, I think one of the things that you've mentioned that I want to bring up is really it's about patience. This is a long game. So the idea, like you said, of, hey, let's hire a direct response copywriter and we're going to pound out some ads and we're going to drive people through a landing page into a credit card page and take their money and move on. Opposed to, like you said, how do we get right copy and content that gets shared by, you know, to a million people and take them to the next step? So the bit of the dating before we get married and helping to pre-qualify people, like you said, you can measure each of those steps along the way and make tweaks and see your ROI. So what if we get, you know, 1,200,000 people share it? What if we get a 0.5% higher click-through rate and turn the dials a little bit instead of looking for the fire hose response?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also feel like, though, I mean, we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the podcast, which was that entrepreneurs are never really starting from square zero or square one. You know, they're always doing something. And what I've noticed is that most, you know, ambitious business owners tend to have these, I mean, call them like dams or like blockages that they're just not really seeing in their business. And when someone can come in and, you know, use a piece of copy in on a particular asset or resource that you have in a good way, that is the fire hose. But when you're designing a marketing strategy, it's better to have that long-term view. So someone can come in and help you, like, oh, you haven't emailed your list in 30 days. You never offered a high ticket offer. You've never offered a cross sell. You've never offered an upsell. Like, you know, those types of blockages can come in and cause major like change really fast. But when you're designing the strategy, that long view, that like, you know, the branding, what people view about you, how they move through your, you know, the experience of being in business with you, that's where, you know, people kind of get obsessed with the tactics and trying to, you know, do something brand new right now to make a fire hose that's out of scratch, and they ignore the stuff they have, but they also ignore the long term on their strategy. So it's kind of funny.
Well, it's funny because I've worked with enough businesses and after going through kind of an evaluation, a qualification of their business, and I'd say, well, let's look at the low-hanging fruit first. So let's talk about your customers who are the most profitable, the most fun to work with, who pay you the quickest, and let's start mailing your existing list. And they're going, well, I want you to find new people. It's like, well, we can find new people, but you've got money sitting in the bank already. All we need to do is ask them. And they often were so interested in attracting new people into their list, they were forgetting that there's people there they have a relationship with who bought them and trusted them at some point, and all they need to do is go back and serve them and ask them, and they'll pay.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think the statistic I saw recently was 70-80% of your revenue is usually from existing customers, or to the extent that you can rely on a certain predictable amount of revenue from people who've already worked with you. And people just don't focus on that. They focus on the front end. And it's insane to me, because the whole point is to make money in business, not to acquire brand new customers and then leave them.
Yeah. I mean, that's a question I ask when I speak to business audiences often. So, you know, has anyone heard the old statistic that it costs 10 times more to attract a new customer to keep an old one? And so everybody puts up their hand. Said, okay, so out of your marketing budget, what percentage are you spending on retention versus new acquisition? And then they're not really sure. So I'm saying, okay, so how many of you are spending any money keeping your existing customers happy and asking them to buy more? Oh, no hands or very few hands. So we just agreed that it costs more to find somebody than to keep somebody. So, but you know, you're right. So we're creatures of, I want it now, I want it fast. And there must be an easier way. Let's look at what somebody else over there is doing, which I think is one of your quotes on your website that, what do you say? A wannabe copywriter imitates, but a true professional understands.
Yep.
So
Yeah. That brings up a whole new can of worms. I'm very anti template in how I train people to write copy. Because when I personally believe that templates can be helpful if you know the underlying principles that you should be adhering to, because templates can speed things up for you.
Sure. It gives you, it might give you a framework, like you're saying, of you know, if you're running an autoresponder series, what are the kind of the things that you want to do to move people? Yeah.
Yeah. And that helps, but you need to understand the underlying stuff first. You know, a lot of the current communication around marketing, you know, you hear about funnel hacking and scripts and all this kind of stuff. And the underlying principles of a lot of this stuff make a lot of sense to model success, to see what the flow of your successful competitors and competition is doing. All of that, like the underlying principle makes sense, but in practice, the way people actually do it is rip off, like go as fast as possible, you know, barely change whatever template or boilerplate they've gotten, and then wonder why they're not getting results. And I'm a student of what people really do rather than what you tell them to do. And in that case right now, that's why I'm kind of anti-template when it comes to copywriting. I would much rather have a person who's never trained in copywriting genuinely communicate with a customer in a clear way and have it be completely wrong technically when it comes to copy. Because most of the time, in my experience, incorrect, like technically incorrect copy, where you forgot the call to action, you know, at the, you know, three quarters mark, you forgot to add a guarantee. Your lead was a little long and maybe what it might have lost someone who wasn't that interested or whatever, right? But if you're genuinely communicating with your prospect, then that's going to be so much more effective than going, yep, got the headline, got the subhead, got the story lead. All right, now I'm going in, now I'm answering this objection, now I'm offering, you know, now I'm offering this and putting a guarantee in there. Now click here, buy now. Why is nobody buying?
That makes sense. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, I've done the funnel hacking side where we've said, okay, we're going into a new industry with a client. And I said, so what we're going to do is we're going to go to your competitor. And we're going to go through their whole sales process and buy what they're doing. So let's see what they're doing. And lots of times it's an eye opener because like you said, they're leaving money on the table. They're going, oh, I never thought of a high ticket item. So I said, like, you notice after you bought this, 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 and this, and this, and now they're going for the big ask like 2 weeks later. So yeah. But yeah, yep. we don't want to copy that.
Exactly. And I think that's what's getting mixed up in at least for a lot of the entrepreneurs that I see. You know, they're either pissed off that someone's ripping them off or they're confused as to why their complete ripoff isn't working.
Well, and so I'm just asking you, this is for, you know, your feedback. So just be blunt.
Sure.
When you're writing copy for somebody, doesn't the copy have to kind of represent the brand and the person? So if you're writing for a person who's a celebrity or a spokesperson, if you look at the Josh Turners of the world or those guys, doesn't it have to kind of match their persona if the people are going to see them out in public on the stage and read their books?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that you have to write in any like specific kind of way. I'm much more of a person who likes to match the tone of whoever, you know, whatever guru I'm working with, if I'm working with a particular personality, because I think their brand is part of the sale. You know, I actually like teach my students sometimes, like when they come to me and they ask me why Frank Kern did something.
Yep.
And I, obviously Frank Kern's a great marketer. He's done a lot of awesome stuff. I'm not shitting on Frank Kern, but
yep.
the point is that he has built such a brand around himself and what he can do that a lot of what he does may not be applicable to a person who doesn't have that type of brand or doesn't have that type of following.
Okay. Yeah.
And without understanding that context, it's difficult for, you know, a new marketer or someone coming in to understand that the way he did it in particular might not be effective for them, but the principle behind what he did might be.
Okay. That, I guess that's what I was getting at. So you did a better job of drawing it out, because I was thinking of guys like Frank Kern and Ryan Dice and all these guys, and people want to rip off or copy their stuff and go, it doesn't work. It's like, well, you're not Frank Kern. You're not Ryan Dice. You're whoever you are. And that persona doesn't match you when they look at who you are online.
Right. Yeah. And that's a huge part of, especially if they're personality based. You know, a lot of businesses right now are trying to be personality based. You know, they're being the expert or the guru.
Yeah.
But there's also something to be said about if you don't have a brand yet, if nobody knows who you are, you can take steps to be positioned in a certain way. And some of those feel and look more authentic than others. But that's more of like a, you know, talking to a PR person, to a person who's an expert in like creating authority on first glance. But then you have to create something unique from that initial perception. And if you sound like a Me Too, or if you sound like someone who they've already heard about, or you're saying things that they've already heard, then it's not going to be interesting.
Yep, that makes sense. So
hopefully
we're drawing close to the end. I want to be respectful of your time. You know, this has been super good. I mean, I hope the listeners you're getting the, you know, getting the message here. I'm a huge supporter of outsourcing and hiring smart people that have expertise in writing copy for a couple of reasons. First of all, they're likely to write better than you are. They're definitely better, they're gonna write better than I write. And secondly, you're going to get another fresh set of eyes on your customer, and you might be leaving some money on the table and just simply missing an opportunity. So Lucas, thanks for your time. Thanks for sharing with us and giving away some of your tips and secrets.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope I was helpful for the audience. I know you've got a varied audience, some people working in bigger companies, some entrepreneurs, but if anybody has any questions, then I'm pretty easy to find on the internet. So I'm also pretty approachable. I don't try to be the untouchable sage on the mountaintop.
So speaking of that, so how can people find you?
My name, Lucas Reshesky on Facebook is pretty easy to find, because you spell with a K and Reshesky's kind of odd. So it should be really easy to find on Facebook. That's where I spend the majority of my time when I'm marketing and teaching. And then my website, www.lucasreshesky.com. Just either of those.
Excellent. And I saw you on Amazon as well.
Yeah, I've got a couple books up. They're primarily for copywriters. You know, if you want to be a freelance copywriter, if you're interested in that, it's some of the stuff that I've written for my students and some of the lessons that I've had. So, but if, you know, if you're just interested, yeah, absolutely. You can go jump over there. You just type in my name as an author and my stuff will come up.
Well, awesome. One last question, and I'll let you get back to your day of helping your clients make buckets of money. And that's, who's one guest you think I need to have on my podcast?
So I looked, you've had a lot of guests so far, and I was really happy to see some of the names that I saw, but I wasn't able to get a comprehensive list. So if you haven't yet, I would recommend trying to get Justin Brooke. Have you spoken with Justin?
I have not. Nope.
So Justin Brooke is a very talented media buyer, and he's also very progressive in the sense that, you know, he'll probably talk a lot more and a lot more intelligently about what we discussed earlier, which is, you know, the ad networks changing and what they're doing and what they expect. So Justin Brooke would be a good person to try and get on here.
Well, excellent. That's super cool. So thanks so much. Listeners, as usual, we'll make sure that we transcribe all these notes so you can go back and you can review some of the stuff that Lucas and I talked about. We'll make sure we put links to his website, his social media sites, Facebook as well, and his book. So thanks for tuning in. I look forward to serving you on our next episode.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode of Real Marketing Real Fast. Now it's time to take your marketing to the next level by visiting DougMorneau.com and downloading our advanced marketing white papers, as well as exclusive resources based on today's episode. That's DougMorneau.com. Until next time, we look forward to serving you right here on Real Marketing Real Fast.